WMFO Medford.
It's about the world he goes around in. It's about the big music and the big trouble and the big 20s. So when they ask you, tell them this one's about the blues. Pete Kelly's blues. Pete Kelly's Blues, starring Jack Webb, with story by Joe Eisenberg and music by Dick Kempner.
My name's Pete Kelly. I play cornet. You'll find us at 417 Cherry Street, Kansas City. It's a standard speakeasy. The whiskey matches the color of your money. It's a fairly quiet crib, never any real serious trouble. The competing torpedoes in town regard it as a sort of a neutral zone, a place to meet and maybe talk things over before going to the gun. The Switzerland of Kansas City. The lease is owned by George Lupo. He's a fat, friendly little guy who has only two things in his life, dollars and cents. We start grinding every night at about 10 and we play till the cash register tape gives out. But that's all right with us. He lets us play the kind of music we like and pays off with a smile. Sometimes we even manage to get a few bucks. The last night we were dragging through the lull hour of the first set when the distinguished old guy came in. I'd seen him in the place many times before, always with the Dutchman and two or three of the Dutchman's guns. He'd sit at their table, letting their whispers float around his gray hair, never taking part, just sit quiet, gaining slowly on the open bottle in front of him, staring at a point that probably didn't exist. This was the first time I'd seen him without the Dutchman. He started to sit at the usual place, hesitated, looked around the half-filled room, took the small table in the corner near the bar. He smiled up at me as he poured his first drink. There was nobody behind it. We went into the wind-up.
Man, we sure drag heel tonight. What's up next, Pete?
Nothing. My lip's raw. Let's get off for a while.
You burn that lip at both ends, Petey. Slow down.
You want a beer at the bar, Ed?
No, thanks, Petey. I'll catch me a hunk of fresh air in the alley.
All right. On your way out, throw some nickels in the pianola, will you?
Right. See you later.
Yeah.
Kelly?
Yeah?
Forgive me, I spoke quite on impulse. I find myself the sudden victim of an overwhelming desire for companionship.
Yeah, I see you're alone tonight.
I'm alone every night. But please sit down, if only for a minute.
Larry?
Thank you. What will you drink?
A little of that ginger ale will do fine. You expecting your friends?
That's the one thing I can count on tonight, the arrival of my friends. I should like to compliment you, Mr. Kelly.
On what?
Your music. I must confess, I don't really understand it, but I do understand and recognize one thing, faith. You play your cornet as though you believed in it.
Thanks.
That is a priceless thing, Mr. Kelly, faith and a belief in something. Never lose it, sir. Because when you do, you're lost yourself.
Yeah. Well, I...
No, please. Just sit another small minute.
All right.
I lied to you, Mr. Kelly. I told you I wanted companionship. No. What I really want is an audience. There's so many things I want to say and so little time left in which to say.
Sounds like you're about to get married. Have another drink, huh?
You think I'm drunk, don't you? Well, you're right. I am. But not on whiskey.
Yeah. You're scared, aren't you? Is that it?
Yeah. Feel my heart. Expending enough energy to power a modest side then.
What are you afraid of?
All evening I've been asking myself that same question. What am I afraid of? Surely it can't be the loss of life. And yet...
You're sick?
With a disease for which neither man nor magician has yet been able to effect a cure. The wrath of a killer.
You're a target. Is that it?
I, as you so graphically put it, am a target.
The Dutchman?
The Dutchman.
Look, I don't make this... Right now, you should be 2 yards the other side of Baffin Bay.
The streets are lined with the Dutchman's gun.
But you gotta make a pass at it. You can't just say, okay, here's my head with a 50-cent cigar in it. Don't you want to live?
I thought not. My adrenals refuse to concur.
Look, isn't there somebody to help get you out of town? A friend?
I have no friend. Except the Dutchman.
The law? Yeah. Now, look, I gotta get back up there. Take this key. Hotel George, around the corner. Go up to my room. There's no reason for him to look for you up there. We'll think of something.
Do you think so? Do you really think so?
Now, look, we're gonna try. If we can't, we'll need 2 50-cent cigars. Now, go on.
P?
Yeah, Red.
What's the matter with the senator?
Nothing 1,000 miles won't cure. All right. Let's do goose pimples. All right, everybody ready? Make it or not. Red, take over. I'm going to duck out for a while.
What's wrong, Petey?
My lip. Starting to limp.
Uh-oh. Here comes trouble.
Mr. Kelly? Which Mr. Kelly?
How many Mr. Kellys you got in this crib?
Never mind, Jamie. I'm ready.
You ask the punk nice, is he, Mr. Kelly, so he gives you with a snotty witch, Mr. Kelly.
All right, Jamie. Please forgive Jamie. He hasn't had much sleep lately. Yeah, well, you wake him up and tell him there's another Kelly. Bob Kelly works downstairs in the plant. Maybe he's the boy you want.
No, we're looking for Pete Kelly.
Yeah?
Yes, Pete Kelly.
No, not Bob Kelly.
Not Bob Kelly, Pete Kelly.
Yeah. Well, I'm Pete Kelly.
I'm Pete Kelly.
We'd like to talk to you for a minute.
Sure.
Outside.
Outside?
Just in the alley. Private.
Yeah, well, I'd like to oblige you, but you see, friend, I got a job to do here.
Outside.
All right, Jamie. Mr. Kelly understands.
Yeah. I'll be right back, Red.
Yeah.
Smoke, Mr. Kelly?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
You're welcome. You like my brand?
Your brand?
Gold Tip. You like them?
Yeah, sure. I never smoke anything else.
There was an elderly gentleman inside this evening. He also smoked some. Did you smoke one of his?
Elderly gentleman?
Yes, about 55. My height, gray hair, blue eyes. He sat at your table. He had a nice drink with him. You smoked a cigarette of his.
Sorry, I haven't seen anybody all night.
All right, Terry, let's get to it. Stop with the circle talk.
Easy, Jim.
We got the rumble you was talking to.
Well, you're wrong.
Were you?
All right.
Go on me.
That's enough. Yeah, all right. Now, you listen, Junior. The next time you put your hands on me, you walk away without them.
You deserve that, Jamie. You have to learn when to and when not to. Jamie's young, Mr. Kelly. He thinks he has to make his reputation in one night.
Can he be friendly? Can he be nice? Can he be honest? Why can't he tell us the truth and let us go about our business?
That's fair enough. Isn't that fair enough, Mr. Kelly? Isn't Jamie right this time?
Yeah, sure.
Seems to me he's being fair. Seems to me he's right this time.
I'm always fair. I just ask for cooperation.
That's it. That's all. That's all we ask. Just cooperation. And, mister, you're going to cooperate. I'm a settler, mister. This gun's been to France and back.
What do you want?
Small hunk of truth. You sat and talked to this gentleman?
You see? He ain't going to cooperate.
Yeah, I talked to him.
What about?
This and that.
What's this and what's that?
Music.
What else?
Horses.
What else?
Women.
What else?
That's all.
You're lying.
Terry says you're lying. He knows. It's his business to know.
Music, yes. Horses and women, no, not him. You're lying.
He was drunk.
How drunk?
Drunk enough to talk about horses and women?
What's his name?
He didn't say.
Where's he now?
I don't know.
You saw him go?
I left him at the table.
All right.
That's it, Terry?
For now. Mr. Kelly says he doesn't know where he is. Maybe he's telling the truth.
You got it all.
But if you're lying, Jamie's going to come back and see you alone.
Well, I didn't need Einstein to figure it out for me. They were a couple of the Dutchman's guns. Assignment, rub out of one old party. Method, burn down anybody in the way. And from here on in, they'd cuddle closer to me than a baby kangaroo to its mother. Well, I had to get that old party out of my room, fast. I told Red to keep the boys working, and I went on the prowl for Barney Ricketts. Barney's an ex-bootlegger. He went broke in 1922. Nobody's been able to figure out how a bootlegger could go broke in 1922, and Barney refuses to tell the secret of his failure. He did it the hard way, and he isn't going to make it easy for anybody else. He wasn't at Sour Sammy's joint. He hadn't shown at Papa Pasta's, and I was starting to worry when I caught up with him at Joe Donegan's over on 12th Street. As usual, he was boiled and loud.
Ah, Pete Kelly, the Kansas City Gabriel.
Listen, Barney, I need a favor.
Without evasion, Petey, I tell you right out that your arrival is ill-timed.
A major league favor.
I was just about to pour a potion, and now I'm forced to ask you to share it with me.
No, Barney, look, there's no time.
That's your trouble, Petey. No true understanding of the meaning of time. Do you know what time in the life of one man really is? I mean, the nature of it and its function.
Yeah, I know all about it. Now, listen, Barney,
of course you don't, and it isn't many men who will so frankly confess their ignorance. That's what I admire most about you, Petey, your honesty in admitting to your abundant ignorance.
All right, Barney.
No, no, you mustn't be disheartened. The very fact that you know that you don't know is a hopeful sign. It means that you are ready to learn, and I will be your guide, counselor, and teacher.
Yeah.
Now then, take time.
All right.
And to properly understand the true nature of time, you must take time to understand it. Regard time as a valise. To each man at birth, such a valise is given, some large, some small, according to his destiny. That is the one thing which he cannot really choose, the size of the valise which we call time.
You all through now?
Yes, what are we going to put into your valise this time?
Maybe a hunk of hope for a guy who needs it.
What's his problem?
He was sitting in 417. I talked to him.
A mobster?
No, educated, cultured, gentle.
I see. A dangerous man.
No, he was lost, Barney. Lost and frightened. The kind of fright that freezes you when you're on the other side of a gun.
I see. Who fingered him?
The Dutchman.
The Dutchman?
That's right.
Tell me, is he about 55, gray hair, blue eyes?
That's right.
And you don't know who he is?
No, he didn't say.
Well, Peter, you're right and you're wrong. He's educated, cultured, gentle. But you're wrong about helping him. Nothing you or anyone else can do can stretch his valise.
Why not?
Because the Dutchman says no, that's all.
Well, who is he?
Dr. Jonathan Budd, an excellent surgeon and general practitioner.
But what's he got to do with the Dutchman?
For the last 2 years, he's been under exclusive contract to the Dutchman, sort of company medic for the Dutchman's torpedoes, on call 24 hours a day. Remove an appendix or a bullet, as the circumstances may require.
I don't make it, Barney. A man like that? Why would the Dutchman want to send him over?
I don't know, Petey, and I don't want to know. Go back to Lupo's, pick up your horn, and forget all about Dr. Budd.
I can't do it.
Heed me, Petey. The Dutchman says drop dead, he'll drop dead. Don't be near him when he falls. Don't get into this, Petey.
I'm already in, Barney. I sent him up to my room.
You didn't?
He's there now, waiting for me.
Get him out of there.
I had to help him, Barney. You can't just stand by and send him into the street to be cut down. A man has to have somebody to worry about him, somebody to help him.
Get him out of there.
I can't.
Why not?
I'm being watched.
By the gun?
Yeah.
You sure?
They got the buzz. I was sitting with them. They're keeping a string on me.
Petey, you fool. How long do you think it'll be before they get into your room?
That's why I came to you, Barney.
No, Pete, not this time. Not where the Dutch...
Look, they're on my back, Barney. I'll draw the guns off. Back to Lupo's. You get him out, Barney. You can do it.
And what do I do with him once I got him? Ask him what he'll charge to cut you out of my life?
Take him to the other side of the river, over to Fat Annie's. Tell Maggie Jackson. She can fold him into the shed out back. He'll be safe there.
Fine. He can make a new life for himself in Fat Annie's shed.
I'll think of something. I'll shake the guns after I get back to 417. And I'll think of something.
You do that, Petey, because if you don't, you'll be dragging a full release before morning.
Well, I scuttled back through the streets, back to 417 Cherry. The guns were right behind me. My valise was getting fuller and heavier by the minute, and I knew I'd added a few pounds to Barney's. But that's the way it is. A guy drifts into your life, holds out a finger for help, and you take hold, and you're near to drifting out of it with him. But what can you do? You gotta take hold, or you don't sleep so good anymore. Well, Lupo glared at me with his what-am-I-paying-you-for glare as I ducked into the joint. I started for the bandstand, and I didn't get past the bar.
Mr. Kelly?
Yeah?
I've been waiting for you.
Yeah?
Could I talk to you?
Oh, go ahead. I'm listening.
Someplace alone?
What about?
It's about my name's Mary Budd.
Oh, come on. Behind the bandstand.
Thank you.
Let's go, Petey. Lupo's just docked us another fin.
I'll be right with you, Red.
Yeah.
All right.
I was told you saw my...
Saw who?
My father.
Lots of fathers come in here. Who's yours?
Dr. Budd. Dr. Jonathan Budd.
You drive a car?
Yes.
Your license with you?
Yes.
Let me see it. Thanks. All right. Now pay attention. Your father's in trouble. The big trouble.
Why? What's happened?
The Dutchman took a dislike to him.
Who's the Dutchman?
You don't know?
My father never told me anything.
Well, you're a big girl now. The Dutchman's a man with a gun. He's pointing it at your father. Oh. All right. Now hold on. Maybe we can...
Why would anybody want to kill my father?
I don't know.
He's never hurt anybody in his life. Why would this man...
Look, lady, I got no answers for
maybe
you.
Maybe if we could find out why... Maybe we could... Are you sure you have no idea?
All I know is the Dutchman said drop dead. There's no court of appeals for that.
Yes. I understand now.
But we still got a chance. It's skinny, but it's there.
Where's my father now?
He's being taken across the river. Fat Annie's place. Boulder Road. Is your car out front?
No, I left it downtown.
Good. Go get it. Make sure you're not tailed. Go to Fat Annie's. See Maggie Jackson. I'll try to shake the Dutchman's guns after the next number. But if I can't get over to Fat Annie's, you collect your father out of that shed and back. Hit the highway north on the Kansas side. Now, you got it?
I'll never forget you for this, Mr. Kelly.
Yeah, sure. All right, let's settle down. Settle down, huh? What's up?
Newlyweds in from St. Joe been asking for Cornet solo for an hour.
All right, what do you think?
Well, how about pigeon-toed Joe?
Oh, my lip and you ask for that? All right.
All right, pigeon-toed Joe. You got it?
All right. I'll give you the pickup. That's all for me tonight, Red.
Well, let me see that.
Huh?
Yeah, you ain't fooling. Your lip's bleeding.
We'll do the next set without me, huh?
Oh, man, that Lupo, he's sure making the deducts tonight.
Where's the Erskine Park, Red?
Around on 10th Street. You better put the top up. Looks like rain.
Yeah, all right.
How long you gonna be gone?
Huh?
I said, how long you gonna be gone?
Depends on how much room is left in my valise. I left the stand and headed for the men's room just like nothing was happening. I bolted the door behind me, crawled out through the small window, dropped into the alley, and lit out for 10th Street over fences and through backyards. Red's Erskine was right where it ought to be. I slammed over to 12th, rattled across the bridge, jolted down Boulder Road to Fat Annie's place. Halfway there, it started to rain. Inside Fat Annie's, business was slow. There was nobody there. Maggie Jackson was making for her piano when I got inside.
Hi, Pete. I'm glad you got here. We got a tenant and shed out back.
Yeah?
Yeah, with a short-term lease. Just a minute, Pete. All right, Ray. I ain't going nowhere. Ain't seeing no one. No how. Cause love and I are parting. Starting now. I'm on good behavior. So, honey, savior, hello. In answer to your passes, the last there's no. I've been somewhere, seeing someone most every day of my sad life. I'm gonna trade in my mad life for something slow and safe. And so, I ain't going nowhere, ain't gonna wrinkle my brow, cause love and I are parting, starting now. That was nice, Ray. Place is really good tonight.
Yeah, business is bad all over. Look, Maggie, how about the guy in the shed? Is he all right?
He ain't bleeding none yet.
Where's Barney?
He just dropped the package like it was hot chitlins and dusted.
The girl get here yet?
What girl's that?
The tenant's daughter.
No girl showed yet, Pete.
Well, the minute she shows, Maggie, send her outside, will you?
You going to the shed, Pete?
Yeah.
Best to go through the kitchen, straight out the back.
Sure. Thanks, Maggie.
Sure. Good luck.
Doc, it's Kelly. Pete Kelly, Doc.
Come in.
Yeah. You all right, Doc?
Yes. The roof leaks and I've run out of cigarettes.
Sure. Here.
Oh, thank you.
I'll give you a light.
That's good.
Yeah, now look, I think we're home safe. I'm getting you out of here.
But tell me, why do you bother?
What?
I said, why do you bother?
Look, Doc, don't confuse me.
You're an anachronism, Mr. Kelly. A moral man in the immoral jungle.
Now look, I talked to your daughter. She'll be here soon.
You talked to my daughter?
Yeah, that's right. She's coming to pick you up.
Small girl, red hair, blue eyes?
Yeah.
Mr. Kelly, I have no daughter.
You don't?
You talked to the Dutchman Smile.
Yeah, but the license, her driving license. She showed me her driving license.
Sure, she did.
I believed her.
Yes, an excellent actress. And you told her where I am. Did she ask you anything else? what you might know about the Dutchman and me.
Well, she asked. I knew nothing.
You're sure? You're sure you told her you know absolutely nothing?
Yeah, that's right.
Then you're safe. You'll be all right. They'll forgive you for trying to help me. You finally did tell them where to find me, and for that, they'll forgive you.
All right, come on. Now, let's get out of here. Let's get going.
No, Mr. Kelly, you'd better go quickly.
Well, I got a car. We'll make a run for it.
No.
But they'll be here any minute.
And I'll be waiting for them. No use to run anymore. In some strange way, I've begun to realize that I'll welcome their arrival. But I don't want to escape. You see, it's impossible for a man to escape from himself. I am nothing more than the works I have done. It is those works which decide the ultimate fate of a man. Mine, and rightly so, are about to kill me. No, we cannot escape from what we have made of ourselves.
Yeah, but look, you can start all over again. There have been others like this before. They ran, took the chance and ran.
Strange. Things taught me in my youth. Things unremembered for years. My freshman days at school and the words of Socrates when Crito urged him to delay the drinking of the hemlock as others before him had delayed. Yes, Crito? And they of whom you speak are right in so acting, for they think that they will be gainers by the delay. But I am right in not following their example, for I do not think that I should gain anything by drinking the poison a little later. I should only be ridiculous in my own eyes for sparing and saving a life which is already forfeit. Please, then, to do as I say, and not to refuse me. And so, I ask you, Mr. Kelly, don't refuse me. Go now, please, for your sake. I'm all right.
No, you're not all right. They're going to kill you. Don't you understand that?
I understand.
Yeah. Sure you do. There's nothing more I can do?
Nothing. Except perhaps a cigarette.
Sure. Take the pack.
No. Two will do.
Yeah. Goodbye, Kelly. Goodbye, Doc.
Kelly.
Yeah.
Please leave the door open.
Yeah.
Kelly's Blues, starring Jack Webb, with story by Joe Eisinger and music by Dick Cathcart, scoring by Matty Matlock.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, lads, and thank you, Ad Council. Yes, my name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org in Medford. Today is the 28th of July, 2021. I want to apologize. Last week, it wasn't Pete Novak, but I played Pat Novak. But to start off the show today, I played Pete Kelly's Blues. That one was titled Dr. Jonathan Budd, with an original air date of the 19th of September, 1951. We'll hear in the second half of the program another Jack Webb drama. This one is his second one, I believe, that he starred in. Johnny Madero, Pier 23. This one's titled The Fatal Auction, with an original air date of the 26th of June, 1947. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I'm Johnny Madero, Pier 23. It doesn't pay to buy a fast car in San Francisco because most of the time you gotta be in low gear. The town is laid out like the profile of a chorus line, and the only time it flattens out is where it runs into the bay. The waterfront goes from south of the ferry building out past the China docks, and on a clear day you can see them batting baseballs over on Alcatraz. Pier 23 is over toward the left field sign, and not far from there you'll find Johnny Madero's boat shop. My place. Oh, I rent boats, and I do anything else that means long odds and short hours. It's a way to make a living. And if you never save enough to get married, at least you got enough to leave town. Maybe I should have left town Monday afternoon. I bought a paper and I read about a buildup on a heavyweight fight in L.A. I stopped in at Lofty's and the boy said neither one of those fighters could beat an egg with a power drill. About 3 o'clock, I started down Post Street when I spotted a new auction house. It was small, with enough dough changing hands to buy back Manhattan Island. Inside it was packed, and up on a wooden stand, a bald-headed guy was selling everything but his suspenders. So I sat down in back, and I noticed a girl standing up against the wall. She was wearing dark green sunglasses, but the rest of her was just about as secret as a plow on the bathroom floor. Her hair was the color of half past midnight, and her dress was made of the kind of goods you buy from spiders. After a while, she walked over to me. Right away, she started to get nervous, and when you look like her, you got a right to be.
Mind if I sit down?
They're your legs, lady. If you want to rest them, rest them.
Thanks. You seem to like the view.
Just temporary. I'm leaving.
Will you get excited if I ask you to stay?
Are you going
to
be proud if I do?
Please, I want you to do me a favor. It won't take long. It'll be a small one.
How small?
They're going to auction off a black leather suitcase in a few minutes. It belongs to me. I must have it back.
Can you speak the language? Do your own bidding, huh?
I don't want someone to know I'm here. It's important. I'll pay you $50 to bid for me.
You just hired me.
Just start bidding and keep on bidding till you get that suitcase. I want it at any price.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's a special item of interest. A black leather suitcase arrived yesterday. Contents unknown. It's handsome. It's beautiful. It's never been opened. Now, who's got sporting blood? The leather alone is worth at least $25. And it's heavy. It's heavy. It could be full of bricks and it could be full of gold. That's what makes it interesting. Now, who's going to start the bidding? Who's going to start it off with a big one?
$2.
Come on. That's an insult. $2? Who'll give 15?
$10.
Ten. Who'll give 30? Ten. Who'll give 30?
Start pitching for our team, mister.
$25.
50.
50.
Double it.
100.
100. The man in the gallery bids 100. You heard him, folks. 100. Who'll give 2?
200.
200.
You got competition, lady.
I got you. Keep doubling.
400.
400. That man in the gallery's got second vision. He knows what the suitcase is worth. The bid's 400. Who'll give 800? Four. Who'll give 8?
800.
800. The man in front here says 8. Who'll give 1,000? The bid's 800. Who'll give 1,000?
Go ahead. Surprise the man.
The OPA won't like this.
You're working for me now. Make it 1,000.
1,000.
1,000. The man in back bids $1,000. Who'll give 1,500? 1,000. Who'll give 1,500? All right. 1,000 once. 1,000 twice. 1,000 for the third and last time. All through bidding. Sold to the men in the gallery. Please come up and claim this prize now.
Here's the money. Pick it up and come back. I'll be waiting.
Yeah.
And don't let him open it. Whatever you do, don't let him open it.
It's your party, lady. I won't even let him peek.
Ah, there's the lucky man coming down the aisle now. Give him room. Give him room. Ah, here he is. And here's your suitcase, mister. Want to open it and tell the folks what's inside?
Yeah, what's in it, Mac?
Just one of my relatives. Here's the dough.
Yeah, sure. All right. Now we have another item here.
Oh. Sorry, son. I was just going for the empty seat.
Yeah, we'll wait for your blockers next time, Pop. Where's the girl? The brunette with the dark glasses?
It's a jail term, son. I don't follow him home anymore.
Well, she was here a minute ago. You must have seen her leave.
No.
Think about it. She must have walked right past you. Think about it.
No, son. When you get to be my age, you don't even do that.
I felt kind of silly, the same way you do when you find a hole in your sock at the shoe store. But it wasn't my dough that bought that case, so I couldn't beef much.
When I got back to the office, I started working on the lock with the key. The case was made of plain black leather, and it was kicked around more than Minnie's gong. Then I opened it. A shiny-looking saxophone was laid out in three parts. For $1,000, you can buy a whole brass section. So I went through each piece looking for a reason. There was a paper box inside the case. It had a gross of reeds in it, same kind you find on the mouthpiece of any saxophone. I couldn't do much more, so I wrapped up the case and put it up in my closet. Then the door opened, and if trouble had a face, this was the way it looked in the morning. He stood there in the middle of the room, and his eyes held me like a fly at the end of two needles. You noticed his eyebrows. They were bushy and thick, and if they got any worse, he'd have to hire a native guide.
Hello, are you Madero?
That's my story. You got a better one?
It's sadder than yours. I'm the guy you left behind at the auction. Who are you bidding for?
Who are you asking for?
Myself.
I suppose we get real friendly. What's your name?
Dunlap, Larry Dunlap. Now, introduce me to the girl who was coaching you.
All right. She was a souped-up brunette with a disappearing act. Now, what does that prove?
Unless you find her in a cemetery, never trust a woman. Especially Claire Underwood.
Yeah. What do you want from me?
I'll take that black leather suitcase you won at the auction.
Look, I saved you some dough. Don't make a pig of yourself. Try to be nice.
I will. I won't kick you when you're dead. Where's that suitcase? You're making me nervous.
So if you got an itch, see a doctor. What makes you so big?
Vitamins. I know all about the sax, Madero. It belongs to me. Give it to me or I start looking.
You better have a license. A sax isn't that important.
It is to me. Maybe I want to start a hock shop.
I'll hold out for your girlfriend. She owes me $50 and I need the dough.
I'll double anything she gives you.
If you mean money, give me a hint.
Will $100 do?
Yeah. The sax is in the closet on top here. Come on. Give me a hand. Give me
sure,
a hand.
Madero, sure. You've got a hand, Madero. Now play it out.
Some days you're not going to make out any better than an ice cube at a cocktail party. When Dunlap hit me, I folded up and my head got the size of a social worker's heart. Well, I started tossing around on the rug. It took me longer to stop than it took Haig to quit Jersey. I knew that sax was gone, so there was no point in getting up. I started dreaming about that day a Cleveland bellhop gave me a key to the wrong room. It was going all right, too, until somebody began shaking me. In that small room, I didn't have to look up to know who it was, because Inspector Warcheck of San Francisco Homicide is the kind of guy you stand next to in a hurricane and wonder what happened to the ventilation.
Making a wish, Madero?
You're here, so it didn't come true. What are you collecting?
Alibis. What's yours for last night at 12 o'clock?
I was in bed.
You got a witness?
No, you can't win them all.
Yeah, that's the way a guy named Charlie Reiser felt.
So maybe it's an epidemic.
So maybe you started it. Someone shot him dead. The guy was a musician.
Try some of the neighbors.
I'll try you first.
You're reaching, Warcheck. I never even heard of the guy.
Oh, that's a handicap, Madero. Maybe you just heard of his instrument, huh?
All right, let me guess. It was a sax.
Hey, you're very bright. An auctioneer helped me trace it down to you. Now, what's the pitch?
A wild one, Warcheck. A dame forced me to do her a favor.
Uh-huh. I bet you force easy.
She paid me to bid for the sax and then took a potter after I won it.
You got an active memory. Does it include a name?
Yeah. Claire Underwood. Run it down and see what it gets you.
Oh, now stop threatening me, Madero. I think that sax is tied in with the murder. Now, where is it?
You're a little late. A torpedo named Larry Dunlap just walked in and sapped me for it.
Yeah? How hard did he sap you, Madero?
Hmm?
There's a pool of blood behind your desk, and it doesn't look like yours. How'd it get there?
I don't know, Warcheck. Maybe somebody got lost and figured it was a blood bank. How do I know?
Yeah. Maybe they thought it was a morgue, too. Left a body. Now look around.
Yeah, do that. Look under the rug, too. Maybe the guy was thin.
All right, Madero. So far, you're in the clear. But if there's blood, there must be a body close by. It'll show. When it does, we'll turn it in for yours.
I'll remember.
Like you remember that $1,000?
Huh?
The auction house, Madero. The $1,000 you gave the joint got homesick and left.
I'm broke, Warcheck.
Yeah?
You'll have to stand on your head to pin this on me.
Maybe I will.
Maybe you're right. I forgot about your head. Once Warcheck sticks to you, you might as well try to pull a mustard plaster off a throw rug. He stood there for a minute, blinking at the light, and you could see big pebbles of sweat standing out on his forehead. He took a handkerchief out of his pocket, and when it came down, it was wet enough to wash all the windows in Lower Manhattan. After a while, he walked out. I watched him out of the window. I tried to figure how I got into this. It was like trying to trace back a conversation to see what word started it. There were lots of questions, and not too much time. Why was a saxophone and a gross of reeds worth all that dough? And who left his blood on my rug as a deposit? The girl must have known what was in the case, but why did she leave it with me? I couldn't make it add up, so I looked up the only good guy I know, a waterfront priest named Father Leahy. He knows most of the bad boys around the piers, and he's heard enough sins to start an art colony. Around Lofty's, they got his name above the line. And that's a tough trick because along the waterfront, an archangel couldn't get a cup of coffee without hucking a wing. I found him over at the Parrish house having dinner.
Hello, Johnny. You want some wine?
No, thanks, Father.
That's one of the good things about this job. You get wine with your meals.
Yeah, I know.
Except you got to watch out. I knew a guy in the seminary liked to eat between meals.
Yeah, yeah.
But the bishop fixed him. He sent him to a rich parish, and the guy had to throw away half his sermons.
I'm in trouble, Father.
Did you buy elevator shoes, or is that a bump on your head?
Somebody knocked me down when I wasn't looking.
Did you get the license number?
It just felt like a truck. I got hit with a club. That's why I want you to help me, Father.
Johnny, you misinterpret my mission in life. You need a policeman. I'm only a priest. Besides, I'm eating.
Look, Father, homicide wants to tack a murder on me.
There goes my appetite. Who's dead? Anybody I could have helped?
His name was Charlie Reiser. He was a musician.
If he's going in the right direction, he may get some work. How did you meet him?
I didn't. I never heard of the guy. It was all a surprise to me.
Sounds more like a shock.
I got a bum shake from the start, Father. A gal with a big purse promised to pay me something if I'd bid for a black suitcase at an auction.
What was the matter with her? Laryngitis?
She was trying to keep somebody from noticing her, but she must have weakened in the final stretch.
What do you mean?
I won the bid with $1,000, but when I came back, the gal was gone.
And you were left holding the bag. What was in it?
A saxophone and a gross of reeds. You could buy the whole outfit with a $5 down payment.
What makes it worth $1,000?
I don't know, Father. The sax belonged to Charlie Reiser. A guy named Dunlap offered me $200 for it.
All that money for a saxophone, and they wouldn't allow me $40 on that old organ.
Dunlap slugged me when my back was turned and piled up a lead.
Did the sax go for free?
Somebody paid for it. When I woke up, there was a lot of blood on the floor.
Yours?
It was unclaimed, but I have an idea a body's going to turn up without it.
You have nothing but murder on your mind, Johnny. Why don't you settle down with a good book?
If Warcheck tags me, I'll have to borrow yours, Father. Right now, I need you to check on a few people for me.
Sure, but I'll need a couple of names for them first.
You know a lot of the combo boys, Father. Check up on Charlie Reiser's friends, especially his women. And find out where Larry Dunlap fits in. Will you do it, Father?
Yes, Johnny, I'll do it. But if I find out you're calling them wrong, I'll drop over to Warcheck's side.
Thanks, Father. If you help me out of this, you're a good guy. You're an angel.
But stop pushing me. I'm not that anxious yet.
When I left Father Leahy, I ran over my leads. You could have counted them on one finger and you'd still have to cheat. The only guy worth looking up was the auctioneer on Eddy Street. Maybe that was all revenge. Why did he tell Warcheck that I took that $1,000 back? Well, I figured I'd find out, so I grabbed a cab back to his store. When I got there, the joint was locked up, but a big neon sign blinked the name J.C. Cole. There was another light coming from the back, so I followed it down. Inside, Cole was working over his cash register tape. I didn't knock, and right away he started making funny noises in his throat. I noticed he was wearing a vest without a tie, and his sleeves were rolled up with big rubber bands. His elbows stuck out, and they were red and knotted up like a baby's face with cramps. And then he made his opening bid.
It's a little late. What can I sell you, mister?
A straight story.
Huh?
The one you told headquarters had too many frills.
Hey, wait a minute. You're the same fellow who bought that suitcase.
You got a good head, friend. How good is it on robbery?
It was dark. I thought it was you, so I called the cops.
You started fast, but you're fading in the stretch.
$1,000 was gone. I figured you took your money back.
That's an early mistake. It wasn't my dough.
You sound like you're mad. Is that a gun in your pocket, huh?
If it makes you talk about that suitcase, I'll say yes.
I don't know what you mean. I said you were taking your chances. A ton of bricks, a ton of gold, remember? I got to make a living, you know.
You don't have to crowd them in. What gives a sax a $1,000 price tag?
I don't know, I tell you. I don't know what thing.
Yeah, well, we'll go into politics later. I think you're lying.
It was just another suitcase, an old leather suitcase with a sax inside. I just tell you, I don't know a thing.
Yeah, keep it up, fella. You'll tell me everything that way. Now, how did you know there was a sax in that case if you never opened it?
Well, Now, listen, mister, let's be friends. I got a little money. Let's be friends.
Go on.
I was just trying to get a little ahead. I got a wife and a kid, a big kid, so I switched saxophones. I took out the original sax with the reeds and put in an older one.
What'd you do with the original?
It was a pretty nice one, brand new, so I sold it to someone, reeds and all, for $200.
You're slowing down. Who's someone, a relative?
He's a friend named Bud, Bud Overbeck. He plays tenor sax at the Downbeat Club. That original was something special, huh?
Yeah, you should have held out for $1,000 on both ends.
Now, listen, fella, Bud's a friend, a good friend on my wife's side. You won't hurt him, will you?
I'll send you a pint if he believes.
Yeah, sure. I'll save it. Anything else, huh?
Yeah. Stop stuttering. You'll give that kid of yours a complex. When he opened the door, you could tell he wanted to shake me worse than a summer cold. I didn't like him any better, but he'd given me something solid to work on. So I got over to the club Downbeat. It's a jazz cellar that warms over King Oliver at 6 bits a throw. Five-piece combo was writing a chorus slow and easy, and you knew the only notes they ever read were on IOUs. There were a dozen or so jazz fans huddled around the bandstand, and if you looked real close at their faces, you saw something that looked like pain. I asked the bartender who Overbeck was, and he pointed out the blonde kid with a face made of warm putty playing a black saxophone. I walked backstage to a small dressing room where the boys grabbed their second wind with a short one. When I opened the door, Claire Underwood stood there holding her breath.
Hello, Johnny. You look angry. Put away those daggers,
I will, baby. I'll guess that you killed Reiser for a saxophone.
Guess again. Why should I kill anyone for a sax?
Tell me why it's worth a grand, and I'll answer that one, too.
All right, Johnny. I'm sentimental. Say Charlie Reiser was my boyfriend, and I wanted to keep his sax as a memory.
Must have been quite a memory, baby.
You didn't meet Charlie.
But I did meet Larry Dunlap. He wanted the sax, too. Why?
How would I know, Johnny? Maybe he was taking lessons.
They weren't that kind. He has too good a lip.
So have I. Only I use it differently.
All right, stop puckering, sweetheart. I want some sense now.
Please, Johnny, if you leave now, I'll give you double what I owe you from the auction.
That's not enough. Look, baby, count up your bills and tell me what a murder rap is worth, huh?
We'll haggle over it later, Johnny. Just meet me at the Ajax Hotel, and I promise you, you'll get a better figure.
Yeah. You gonna add some interest?
Come here, and I'll show you what I mean.
I'm not running a service. I need some answers. Come on, come on. I want some action. Come on.
Use your arms, Johnny.
You got too big a mouth, baby. Somebody's gonna close it on you.
Show me, Johnny.
All right.
The music stopped, Johnny.
What do you care? We're not dancing.
Johnny, please, you're squeezing me too tight.
Yeah, it's a bad habit. Now tell me about that sax.
Listen to me, Johnny. I told you I got to see Overbeck first. I'll tell you everything later.
Yeah, after you talk Overbeck out of his sax, huh?
Yes. Is it a deal?
You're too anxious to sign. I'll talk to Overbeck myself.
All right, Johnny. I'll help you get him here quicker.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Scream, Johnny. Scream. Listen.
Louder, baby. You'll really need it in a minute.
Help! Help! Help!
Hey, what's the matter? What was she screaming about, mister?
She couldn't catch me.
This man's drunk. He was trying to snatch my purse.
Is that true, mister?
Call a cop and find out.
Yeah, I will.
No, no. Please, don't bother. Just get him out. Just throw him out, Mr. Overbeck.
You heard the lady, mister. Do I get rough?
Save your strength, Overbeck. You'll need it later. Claire had a nice act, if you didn't mind playing straight man to a vulture. She draped herself on Overbeck's arm, and she looked as cool as a vacation in Maine. As I walked out, Overbeck was still showing his teeth, but it didn't matter, because you got the idea he wasn't strong enough to fight off a sneeze. Well, there wasn't much I could do except wait for Claire to show, but it started to drizzle, so I figured my best bet was her hotel. In the lobby, a rose-colored carpet with a touch of yellow jaundice led to the desk. The clerk told me she hadn't come in yet, but for $5 he could tell I was a friend, and he gave me her key. I went upstairs, and when I opened Claire's door, I knew something was wrong. A lot of towels were thrown all over the floor, and everything was gone from the closet but the mothballs. Claire had skipped, and before I could walk out, Dunlap walked in. One hand was in his pocket, and the other had enough tape to wrap up a mummy.
Can I come in, Madero?
You're old enough, Dunlap. Make up your own mind.
I have. Where's Claire?
You're early. I think she's still busy.
Give me a magazine. I'll wait.
It'll be a long one. I'm not hanging around.
Oh, the fun's just beginning. Sit down. Sit down.
I guess I am tired.
Yeah, this gun makes everybody drowsy. Now, what's your tie with Claire?
Nothing that's deep-rooted. Are you writing a column?
Yeah, the obituary, and you're going to make the morning deadline.
You're too cocky, Dunlap. Don't turn your back.
I won't. Claire blew her chance. The best she could do was disarm.
Yeah, you ruined my carpet.
When they pass your cup around, I'll be generous. In the meantime, you're going to stick around until Claire brings that black saxophone.
I hope she's got some food in the icebox.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're waiting for that sax, we're going to starve to death. Claire's not going to show.
What makes you a prophet?
A guy named Bud Overbeck. He had the sax last, and Claire was working him over for it.
I'll work you over for less. What are the rest of her plans?
She was warm. Maybe she left a smoke signal.
All right. You're getting too stubborn.
Put away the gun, Dunlap. You can only use one arm.
I'll clean the bases with this index finger. Pick a spot to fall.
Hey, don't clutter up the floor now, Dunlap. We got company.
Hey. What's this? The wrong room? Claire said we'd be alone.
We are. Just the three of us.
Who's he, Madero?
Huh? What are you talking about? Claire told me to come here. She told me to wait for her.
Look, fella, save your lip for another chorus. Just tell me where she left you.
I don't feel so good. She was at the Downbeat Club. She was helping me put my sax away. I just came up here to wait. We were going to be alone.
All right, fella. I'm cutting down the crowd. You're with Madero now. I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm going home, too. I feel sick. I'm going home.
You'll never make it on your knees. What's the matter?
I don't know. I guess I gave the new horn too big a ride tonight. I got a weak heart.
Your eyes aren't too strong either. You're walking right into that closet.
They told me not to play so hard. Maybe I played too hard. Help me, fella. You look familiar. I seen you somewhere, huh? You look fuzzy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel sick. Someone must have slipped me something. I never felt like this before. I'm sick. Real sick.
You'll never get any sicker, fella. Overbeck was dead even before he had a chance to see if Gabriel paid his boy's scale. He hit the floor and turned over on his back, and you figured he'd cross the River Jordan with a backstroke. I got a good look at him now. His face was all twisted up like bedsheets after a nightmare, and up near his hairline, a long, thin scar ran into his scalp. Well, I didn't know what killed Overbeck, but whatever it was, he didn't get 2 weeks' notice. I figured if homicide caught me here, I'd get my walking papers, too, right down to the last 20 feet. I started for the door, but Warchick opened it for me. He looked at the body and then over to me.
You on a spree, Madero?
If you're footing the bill, Warchick.
The state will from now on. Now tell me about the guy on the floor.
He's dead.
Must have had parents. What's his name?
Bud Overbeck. He was a musician at the Downbeat Club.
Yeah. Tell me some more.
Roll him, Warchick. Maybe he's got a diary.
All right. Yeah, here's his wallet. All right, Madero. How long you been here?
Why?
The wallet's empty.
Well, that's too bad. Your girlfriend's going to have to get along in last week's presents.
I trail a guy named Dunlap up to this apartment, and I find you and a dead body. Now, there's a tie, any way you look at it. Mm-hmm. Now, just what happened?
I don't know, Warchick. I didn't see the picture. I just tagged by for the end. You know?
Must have been a sad one. I think he's poisoned. I like the look in his eyes.
Get the girl who put it there.
Well, just give me a hint, huh?
Overbeck was playing caveman with Claire Underwood before he came up here.
What does that give him besides hair?
Maybe a Mickey. When I left, she was warming up an argument for his saxophone.
She get it?
She didn't. Dunlap's losing man hours. He just walked out here, and I think she's in his list.
Yeah. I'm beginning to get an idea now myself.
Does it hurt?
You and the Underwood girl are running some kind of a racket for that saxophone. She left you behind a front for her.
You haven't seen her, Warchick. She doesn't need that kind of help.
But you will when I get through checking. Still got a few calls to make, and I want the lab to work over the body. By then, I'll have enough to come back and hold you, Madero.
You couldn't hold a lap dog with a suction pump.
All right, big shot. I'll go a long way to get you for this, a long way.
You got the drag, Warchick.
Yeah. It's going to slow you down a little.
Warchick wanted to mother the body until the coroner came, and when I left, he was squeezing himself into a chair. He fit tighter than a whale in a crib. You can word it any way you like, but the big riddle was that saxophone. Claire had it, and Dunlap wanted it, and a couple of guys died for it. My only alibi was Dunlap, but you might as well ask Kahn to hold still for Lewis. I buzzed back to the office, but there was no message from Father Leahy, so I stared out the window for a while, wondering how to bake a cake with a dynamite charge when the phone rang. Yeah?
Hello, Johnny. This is Father Leahy.
What'd you find out, Father?
It's not pleasant, Johnny. I'm down at the morgue. The lab report on Bud Overbeck just came in.
He died of poisoning, huh, Father?
The bitter kind. Overbeck's heart couldn't stand all that dope.
Hmm?
Coroner found a used saxophone reed in Overbeck's pocket. It was soaked in hop.
So that's what made that saxophone so big. The grosser reeds.
That's right, Johnny. Overbeck was absorbing the stuff while he played.
Oh.
He probably never knew what hit him.
Well, what about Reiser? How does he figure?
Reiser was making his pin money peddling dope to nightclubs. He was getting his shipments from Mexico.
How did Claire and Dunlap figure?
They were a couple of partners who wanted to ease out Reiser and go into business for themselves.
The idea must have gone to Claire's head. She's doing a solo now, and Dunlap thinks she has the sax.
Warchick feels the same way about you, Johnny. He's out to tag you for everything.
He's smarter than that.
I don't know him that well. But it adds up in his book because he thinks you're leaving town.
Hmm?
Someone's booked a passage on the 2 a.m. plane for Mexico this morning in the name of Jay Madero.
I'm being jockeyed, Father. It's either Claire or Dunlap. They're both as black as sin.
Maybe so, but Warchick still thinks you're the dark horse.
Up until now, it was like trying to sell a toupee to a ball-headed eagle. But when the turn comes, everything happens in a hurry, and you began breaking more records than a disc jockey with a hangover. If Father Leahy was right, Claire or Dunlap had enough dreams in that saxophone to start a waltz contest, and I knew if they both got out of town, Warchick would be around to tag me for the last dance. So I got out to Mills Field, and out on the far end of the strip, a twin-engine plane was warming up. Claire was standing with her back toward me, and even from here, you could see what a stiff tailwind could do to a landing gear. When she saw me, she raised her eyebrows and figured her temperature was even higher.
Sorry I had to borrow your name, Johnny.
You're too small for it, baby.
I got a big ego.
And that gun bolsters it, huh?
That's my story.
Well, tell it to Homicide. They'll take a nibble on either you or Dunlap.
Better throw them Dunlap. I got a date in Mexico City.
It's a blind one, baby. You're going in the wrong direction.
Larry, what are you doing here? I thought you...
I want those reeds, baby.
You'll be peddling pencils when I'm through with you.
I'll leave the sides, too, baby. I'll be lonely.
You won't need that kind of music where you're going, Larry.
You're the ones I told, baby. I trusted you. We were going to do this together. I trusted you.
We all make mistakes. You got the short end.
I'll stretch it a little. You got another chance. Let's team up again.
Sorry, Larry. I'm crowding you out.
You only think so.
Now get out of my way. I got to make the plane.
Make a grave first. I want that stuff.
I won't miss again. Stay away, Larry.
Put up a sign.
Yeah.
You missed again. Give me the gun.
No, I'm selfish. I'll hold on. Pull him off me, Madera. Pull him off.
There's a law.
All right, baby. You run out of chances. It's my turn now.
No. Please, Larry. Put the gun away. You win. I'll split it with you now. You win. Honest, Larry, you win.
Just to show you I agree.
You're through, guy. Drop the gun.
Yeah. Well, what are the odds of my getting away in that plane?
70-30, maybe.
Things are too tough at 50-50. Come on, I'll ride downtown with you.
Dunlap told the whole story down at headquarters. It seems that Reiser, Claire, and he were buying dope from Mexico and peddling it here in the form of soaked-up reeds. Reiser was contact man in Mexico, but the only way they knew him down there was by his black saxophone. Claire and Dunlap decided to narrow the profits down to two by shooting Reiser and taking over. Claire used the gun, and, well, that started her to thinking that she could do even better with a single act. She needed that black sax, though. Reiser got wind of it and hid the sacks with the reeds in the basement. His landlady found it after he was tumbled and sold it to that auction house. And Claire had me buy it and followed me back to the office where she tried to peg down Dunlap. The sack she took turned out to be a phony because the auctioneer had already sold the black one to Bud Overbeck. The track was switched to him, but not soon enough. Overbeck didn't know the reeds were loaded, and after an all-night jam session, he folded up with a heart attack. Well, Warcheck asked only one question. Wasn't it tough luck for an innocent guy like Overbeck? I don't know. At least there was one time he played right out of this world.
Johnny Madero, Pier 23, starring Jack Webb as Johnny Madero, has been presented by the Mutual Network. Johnny Madero is written by Herb Margolis and Lou Morheim. Gail Gordon played Father Leahy, and Bill Conrad played Inspector Warcheck of Homicide. Others in the cast were Helene Burke, Bob Holton, Herb Butterfield, Irvin Lee, and Herb Rawlinson. Original music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman, and the entire production was directed by Nat Wolf.
We heard there Johnny Madero, Pier 23, titled Fatal Auction, with an original air date of the 26th of June, 1947. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org here in Medford. We probably next week I'll continue with some more Jack Webb dramas. There's another one, I believe, that he started, another hard-boiled San Francisco drama. Seems to be a bunch of Dashiell Hammett writers out there, and his friend there, Breen, got mixed up with him, which I alluded to last week. But just want to say thanks for listening. We'll carry on next week. Have a good week.
of COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.